Legal Matters.
Trudy Brookman is my guest. She's a consumer legal expert and she joins me now. Trudy, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time.
I'm delighted to be on the program, Opie.
So tell me, what is prescribed debt? What does that mean?
Prescription of debt means, let me explain it first, as a legal defense to a claim for payment. So someone comes to you saying, I'm your creditor. Remember, I loaned you money a few years ago. I'm holding out my hand now. You need to pay me. What your response is then, if you qualify for prescription of the debt, is that you say, friend, sorry, the debt is prescribed. It's no longer due. I don't owe it to you. And that's the end of the story. So it's a defense against a claim for payment.
And how do I discover whether or not my debt is prescribed or not? But more importantly, I'm interested in understanding the motivation of this legislation. Why does it exist? I would imagine that any responsible country wants to see its citizens pay their debt. So I suppose what I'm trying to do here is, as some form of a disclaimer, I'm trying to say to people, this is not a conversation for wanting to make you avoid paying your dues. If you owe somebody money, pay them. But there are laws that are about how long a debt needs to be current or not. What is the rationale behind this law, and what is this law?
Aubrey, I agree with you. This is not about acting immorally, not paying your dues. But what our constitutional court says, and we must remember these are our top judges, they say that prescription represents the vital role that time limits play in bringing certainty and stability in legal affairs and in social interaction. So what it does is it means that your debt doesn't continue forever and ever and ever and a day. What we used to have in Roman times, so if you can cast your imagination back to the time of Cicero and Julius Caesar, in those days, your debt continued even after you've died, and your descendants, your beneficiaries, so usually your eldest son, would have to continue paying that debt, and even his kids might inherit that. We've decided that that's not good for society. It eventually becomes a type of slavery, and that is against the good morals of our society. Yeah. So the idea is it's also much harder to prove a debt after 3 years. Everyone's memory fades a little bit. Yeah, your documentation can get lost, etc. The idea is just to bring certainty and stability in our society.
So what is the mandatory sort of period for a debt to remain current, and then under which circumstances does it become prescribed? And is all debt subject to that law?
Almost all debt is. There are certain claims that are not monetary claims that can fall outside prescription, but generally most of the debt that you would think of would be subject to prescription. There are different time periods. If you have signed a mortgage bond, for example, it'll be 30 years. If you owe taxes, that's 30 years. If you have gotten a loan from the state, that's 15 years. If you have a debt arising from a bill of exchange or a notarial contract, you would know if that applies to you, then that's 6 years. But for normal debt, you've got an account with someone and you owe the money on that, you've taken a loan, your vehicle finance, all of those things prescribe after a period of 3 years.
So there are different categories with different periods for how long that debt can stay current. It appears that the lion's share of the debts that stay current for longer than 3 years are those owing to the government. Under which context, under which circumstances does a government give anybody a loan?
Well, imagine you are a state employee and your kids get some type of bursary to study, for example.
Yeah.
That would be a loan from the state.
NSFAS
loan also is a loan from the state. It's a parastatal organization.
Okay, okay, and I get it now, because I was thinking, wow. Okay, so the state can give out loans? Wow, okay. Give us a call, 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. Would love to hear from you. Have you been harassed by creditors? And do you suspect perhaps that the debt for which you are being harassed is perhaps prescribed? Trudy says that most debt is prescribed after 3 years. Tell me, Trudy, what is the process that a creditor has to go through to keep a debt current if indeed the person who owes them for longer than 3 years? I mean, I would imagine that there's a process, yeah?
That's right. So part of it can be a process. The other aspect is that by one's own behavior, you can keep your debt current. I'm speaking about the debtor now, the guy who owes the money.
Right.
So if you make a payment towards your debt, then the three-year period only starts running again from the day of your payment. If you make a verbal or a written acknowledgement or even an acknowledgement that you owe the money by your behavior, it can be tacit. In other words, a silent acknowledgement, just something one can infer from your behavior. Then you've once again interrupted the prescription, and it only the three-year period starts running from the day on which you made that acknowledgement. And then in terms of the process that you mentioned, the way in which a creditor can make sure that your debt doesn't prescribe is to sue you. In other words, a summons will be delivered to your house or to your place of work and served on you by the sheriff of the court. Then you know, okay, well, now I must forget about prescription. Now I'm in a court battle. And that's the way in which creditors can ensure that they definitely do get paid, even though a period of time is passing.
So you're saying
to me,
issue
that summons within the three-year period.
Yeah. So you're saying to me, you can score your own goals here. I mean, by certain tacit behavior, you can actually interrupt the time that is required for that debt to ultimately be prescribed by one acknowledging the debt. If somebody gives you a call within that three-year period and say, Aubrey, you owe so much money to Ellerins, and you say, yes, that's it, you bust. Is that what you're saying to me?
Exactly, Aubrey. We must be quite careful. If someone calls you about an ancient debt that you can't even recall, or where you know you paid it, or one where you're disputing that claim, you don't want to pay, then I would suggest that you keep that phone call as short as possible. It's quite hard to bite your tongue on the phone and say to them, send me an email and I can respond to that.
Yes.
Then you think about how you're going to respond to the email, or you just ignore that email. If you want your debt to prescribe, you must make sure that you don't do anything to acknowledge that you owe that money.
And part of acknowledging could be to say, look, I'll pay so much per month.
Exactly. Even if you don't pay, just making the offer to pay or making an arrangement to pay it off over a period or whatever, all of that is an acknowledgement. And that will mean that the three-year period starts to run again from the day that you made the acknowledgement.
Like you could be like 2 years and 11 months and 28 days. If they call and you say, yeah, I know that it starts from one again.
Exactly. Yes. So you must be very careful about your behavior and your words.
All right. Give us a call. 011-883-0702. Number of categories of prescribed debts, right? There are a number of creditors who fall into different categories. Why is it that government gets to have the lion's share of the period for which the debt is...
Aubrey, it's literally because they make the laws, so they've benefited themselves there. Of course, it's important that taxes are paid, and I suppose our society would collapse without that. But as a fairly
cynical taxpayer,
it was really just because they could.
Okay, all right. Let's take some calls. Sharon is in Douglasdale. Good evening to you, Sharon.
Good evening.
Yeah.
I would just like to ask Trudy, I'm having a problem with a departmental store that I have paid the account up fully to my knowledge. I've got debt collectors phoning me and telling me there's an outstanding amount. The departmental store cannot give me any proof that I bought any goods from there, and the debt collectors still keep on phoning. What do I do?
Judy?
I would quite forcefully tell the debt collectors that if they can't prove any debt, you are paying nothing, and that they must stop harassing you, and you block their phone number. So if you are certain that you're in the clear, you don't need to accept any further calls or communications from a debt collector that's trying to collect a debt which doesn't exist. There are some unscrupulous debt collectors out there. I suppose there are some unscrupulous retailers as well that try to collect debt which isn't due. I would give it a proper check first, though. One doesn't want to get into trouble if there was an amount due that you just didn't take into account, or a purchase that you maybe made and you forgot all about it. Check it carefully, but if you're certain that you don't owe the money, I would block the calls from the debt collectors. I tell them very clearly, you need to prove the amount, and you haven't proven it to me. Therefore, it's not due, and I'm not taking calls from you any further. What I would then recommend is that you check your credit record a little bit later. Wait a month or two, and then do a check of your credit record. Every consumer in South Africa is entitled to check their credit record once a year, free of charge. If you go and look on my website, I've got the links to each of the credit bureaus. Websites where you can do that checking. You'd have to just register first. Go to www.brookman.co.za, and then look under Truth Workshop. You'll find a blog post there that says how to check your credit record. If you find on your credit record that departmental store that you're speaking about has listed you, then you just need to get your credit record cleared. Keep all your evidence that, you know, you didn't owe any further monies, so that you can submit that to the credit bureau and say to them, this is nonsense. I don't owe any further monies, and you must make sure that my credit record is cleared. An attorney can do that for you for probably R1,500 as well. It's not a terribly expensive thing relative to the type of fees that lawyers usually charge.
Sharon,
but you can also do it yourself.
Good luck to you. Helen is in Roodepoort. Hi, Helen.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, Helen.
Yes, I'm inquiring about the prescription on municipal debt, specifically electricity charges. Lack thereof.
So what you're asking is how long, what is the retention period for that debt, and after how long can it be considered to be prescribed, right?
Yes, if we've never received a bill.
Yeah. Trudy?
Wow. So we're trying to work out, first of all, is this a debt due to government? So, yes, I assume that it would be. But it's not a tax. So we're not speaking about your rates and taxes. This is an electrical charge. Really, there are two perspectives. One could say, no, this is just an ordinary debt. It's good supply to you, and therefore the three-year period would apply. But I think the more correct approach would be to say, sorry, you're going to have to wait 15 years because it's a debt that you owe to, whether it's Eskom or your local government. So you're saying that you've never had an invoice. For how long has that been?
10 years.
Gracious. Okay.
Well, and initially we tried to get an account out of them, but we gave up eventually. And yes. I even went to the public protector, didn't help. And another is case law that says you know, you're not responsible to make somebody give you a bill. So yes. I don't know if that would apply to, you know.
Okay, so how the prescription would work is, let's say for the next 5 years, you still don't get any bills. Then on day one, after the 15 years have passed, that first account that you should have gotten in month one will have prescribed. The next month, the second month's one will prescribe, etc. So you're always going to be like 15 years ahead if that's how it worked out. But if they cotton onto you and actually manage to get their acts together to send you the invoices, then the period for, let's say, 14 years and 11 months will still be due.
Helen, exactly. In Ruderport, good luck.
Yeah. 14 years, not all the way back to that.
Good luck to you, Helen. Trudy, I mean, let's talk a little bit about that. The fact that I knowingly consume electricity, whether or not I receive a bill, should I not be making inquiries from the municipality or Eskom or whatever my provider is for electricity as to why am I not?
She has made inquiries. She's done her part.
No, sure. In this case, I'm not speaking specifically about Helen. I'm speaking about the responsible consumer, for example, whoever that might be. Is it not part of your responsibility as a consumer of any good or service to inquire why you are not receiving a bill?
For sure. I would certainly say so. Not just, out of a ethical duty, but also because you can land into a terrible financial position if you don't get invoices for 6 months, and then in month seven they all get sent to you and you have a real cash flow problem paying up 6 months' worth of accounts in 1 month. So, yes, it's generally a very sensible thing to ensure that even if you know that an account is due to you, that you inquire about it and get hold of it. Helen's situation is particularly unusual, I must say. I go, well, heaven alone knows exactly what's going wrong with admin there.
Yeah. But I tell you, it's not the first time I've heard that. In fact, 10 years sounds a little short. I know people that haven't. No, I'm serious. I mean, in this program, we have these conversations. But Trudy, then by the same token, Isn't it incumbent? Isn't it part of the responsibility of the service provider to provide invoices?
Certainly, that's their role. Yes, if you deliver a service and you want to be paid for it, you must invoice. Definitely part of the role. I'm not saying that completely absolves a failure to invoice absolves the consumer from paying forever. If the invoice is provided a bit late, no problem, then you must just pay at that stage. But I hear what you're saying.
And is that a defensible issue in law? Can you go to court on the basis of that and win a case?
No, I think I would rather rely on prescription.
Yeah.
There is a court application that one can actually launch to ask a supplier to properly account to you. So the courts really are very focused on getting proper accounts before the consumer, so that the consumer can make payment. It's not going to, in the vast majority of cases, I imagine there might be one or two exceptions. If you never get an invoice or there's a weird situation like Helen or your other callers who just for decades don't get invoice, despite inquiring. But normally, the court would have the perspective. You know, you've received services or goods from the supplier. Just inquire, find out from them then.
Yeah.
How much am I supposed to be paying?
My guest is Trudy Brookman. She's a consumer legal expert. We're talking about prescription. Please give us a call, 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. Michelle is in Pretoria. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. It's not a prescription. Mine is actually a bit tricky. I had a judgment dated back to 2007.
Yeah.
And my employer paid it via a garnishing order. And I think the amount that was owed was like $5,500, which was paid up. But the implementation of the judgment, the garnishing order, didn't include the 15% interest. And I think by 2009, it was paid up and no money was ever deducted again. I didn't receive a letter, a phone call, nothing. at the beginning of the year in January, I got a phone call from a debt collector saying that I owe all this money, the money that I have proof of that was paid over to the previous debtor that I owed doesn't count, and they are now stating that I have to pay all the interest and the money owed. What do I do?
Trudy?
Okay, let me just check exactly what you are saying. So you said that the judgment debt, the $5,500, was paid already by 2009, but not the interest
yes.
on it. So the
yes,
interest,
not the interest was
from
implemented.
From the date of the judgment until the end of 2009,
yes.
then the interest
yes.
must stop running because your judgment debt is fully paid. So there's no capital sum for interest to accrue on anymore. So you're saying that they're now claiming interest? Is it just for that
somebody
period?
Somebody bought the file.
2007
yes.
to 2009.
Yes, somebody
bought
your debt. This new, yeah, the collector, yes, in 2010. So they contacted me now in 2021, stating that I have to repay the debt again.
You can't pay the capital sum again. Only the interest is due, right? And it's only
okay.
the interest from 2007 to 2009 when you made your final installment on the $5,500.
Okay, it looks like that.
So, yes, so look, interest runs on a capital sum. So the way in which one would properly calculate it, you can probably find some type of acute calculator on the internet, is let's
okay.
say you were paying all 500 rand a month over the period, then for the first month, the interest is on 5,500 rand. The second month, it's on 5,000 rand. The third month, it's on 4,500, et cetera, et cetera. So it's on a reducing capital sum. So the interest, the 15% is charged every month on a lower amount. So it'll be less than 15% times 5,500 times 2 years.
Okay.
So, so don't be caught out. These people who buy a debt often buy prescribed debt. So actually your question fits in very nicely with the topic we're discussing. And it's illegal to buy a prescribed debt. And the type of person who buys prescribed debt or very
He's
old
unscrupulous,
debt like yours,
yeah.
Are often very unscrupulous. You have to stand firm and get a lawyer on your side if necessary.
Michelle, don't go away. Don't go away. I really want to ask a little bit more about this particular case, Trudy.
Okay. Today they sent me a letter stating they have already started with attachments, so they're going to collect my assets and auction it off to recover the money owed.
Yeah. Okay. Let me ask this question to Trudy. Let me just ask this question to Trudy. Trudy, the fact that she has paid the capital amount to the creditor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that somebody later bought the debt, right? I think they call them SPVs, special purpose vehicles, or something like that. Is this not the involvement of a third party in an arrangement between two parties? In other words, here comes this other individual who claims that they've bought the debt. Tell me about the legal bona fides of that kind of relationship.
Although it is possible to buy someone's debt or debtor's book, we talk about buying a debtor's book, and
yep.
then often it's a portion of the creditor's debt that's owed to him. Let's say that the harder ones to collect, that it's quite convenient for the creditor to just sell that to someone, because if they have to put in the effort, they don't know whether they'll get a cent. But if they sell it to this new guy, then at least they're going to pay them, let's say, 20% of the book value of that debt. They then are geared to really put pressure on people like the caller, threatening to attach their assets and going wild, and really putting fear into people to try and persuade them to pay this very old debt. In order to attach assets, there are quite a few steps, And for a tiny amount, like the interest over 2 years on 5,500 rand, it's not worth attaching assets. I mean, yeah.
It costs more.
It could probably attach.
Yeah, it probably costs more.
They'd be sorted.
Yeah. All right, Michelle, thanks very much. Appreciate your call. Let's speak to Bashir in Indonesia. Hi, Bashir.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very good, thanks. Go ahead, Bashir.
Hi, Kiri. How are you, my dear?
Go ahead, Bashir.
Kiri, I was involved in an accident quite a few years ago. And unbeknown to me, about 3 years left after the accident, and I got a statement from the hospital stating that I owe an amount. So I queried it, and obviously my medical aid was quite adamant that that amount had been paid. A few months after that, very, very brutal, the sheriff of the court sent his people to my address. They made a list of all the items that way exceeded the amount I owed them. And I then tried to make an arrangement with them to say, listen, try and liaise with my medical aid, and they will definitely give you some type of confirmation that the amount has been paid. But then, obviously, it goes one step further. The sheriff, 2 months later, come back again with crowbars, etc. They're about to rip my gate off. I have to leave work, go back home, try to appease these guys to say, listen, this is not the way people behave. There must be definitely a more intelligent and an amicable method.
Medical aid got proof of their payment of that debt?
Look, they furnished them with everything, the medical aid, right?
So this includes the proof of the payment of what they say
the
you
proof
owe them.
Of the payment.
Right, okay.
Okay. And then obviously the capital sum was 15,000 rand. The second time when the sheriff sent these people to my gate, they were not willing to settle for nothing less than a full payment with the interest at that point in time was 22,000. And they were not willing to settle for nothing less than that amount.
But why would you want to pay them anything, Bashir, if you've got proof of the payment of the capital amount? Why would you even start a negotiation of that nature?
I think, like Trudy alluded earlier on, the hospital probably sold all their debt to debt collectors. And these guys were just adamant. For me, it actually is on the boundaries, on the fringes of criminality.
Well, here's what I'm hearing, and then we'll allow Trudy to come in. You've paid the debt. You've paid the debt. You've got proof, right?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Let's hear what Trudy has to say. Trudy?
I'm worried that you're speaking about the sheriff, Bashir, because the fact that the sheriff has come a second time seems to me to indicate that they have taken a judgment against you. So the hospital how the process should work is that they should send you a letter of demand, first of all. That doesn't come via the sheriff. It's usually by registered mail, or they'd send you an email. Then the sheriff comes with a summons and delivers that to you. And then if you don't respond to the summons, then they are allowed to take what we call a default judgment. In other words, they go back to the court to say, Bashir hasn't responded, so please, judge, can I have, or magistrate, can I have a judgment against him? Then they take that to the sheriff again, and the sheriff then comes to say to you, you need to pay within 7 days, for example, this 22,000 rand, otherwise I'm coming back to attach your assets, or I'll get a garnishee order against you. So it sounds to me as though you have an urgent job to do, and that is to get that judgment against you reversed. That we call that rescission of judgment.
Because he's paid.
You better get a lawyer to do that.
Yeah, and I'm hearing, Trudy, that he's paid. Something's wrong here. If his medical aid...
That's what he needs to tell the judge who granted the judgment against him.
But I have already paid. Here is the proof of payment provided by my medical aid. Please, that was granted incorrectly against me, and as a result, it shouldn't stand. It needs to be reversed, and that will avoid the sheriff coming back to demand the payment of the $22,000. The increase of the amount from 15 to 22. I suppose that's possible with the legal fees, with the interest over a few years, etc. The legal rate of interest is quite high compared to other interest rates.
Bashir, will you do that? Because something sounds really wrong here. If you've paid and there is proof from your medical aid, there's no way they should be messing you around like this.
Absolutely.
Hold on. all right. Bashir, Trudy's listening.
Trudy, look, my issue is the amount has been paid. It's an amount that has been paid two times. The original amount paid by the medical aid, right? They sorted out the bill. And then an additional amount, I needed to take a loan of 22 to sort the sheriff at my gate. And I'm saying, there is no recourse in terms of rescinding that decision. You're saying I should employ a lawyer and have it rescinded. And I believe that particular the amount they've already got, the lawyers acting for the hospital or the people that bought off the debt, they've got the amount. I'm saying, do I have any recourse? I'm in a position where layman, I believe I've got Hopkins' choice.
You do have recourse, Bashir. That's what Trudy was saying.
Yes. So you need to get the... Sorry, I didn't appreciate that you had paid under the pressure that the sheriff put you under.
$22,000 and $15,000.
Oh, my goodness.
And this
So step one will be to go to a lawyer and get the judgment rescinded. Once again, that's not a very difficult job for a lawyer, particularly because you can prove that the money has been paid. I mean, was paid initially by your medical aid. They'll get that rescission done. That's almost an administrative process. You don't even have to appear before the magistrate or anything like that. So that's not an expensive process. And you can get almost any lawyers who are close to that magistrate's court that granted the judgment against you in the first place to go and do your rescission. The moment that you hear that the judgment has been rescinded, when your lawyer calls to say, okay, it's done, then you take that notice from the attorneys to say that the judgment has now been rescinded. You take that to the hospital's legal department to say, I paid you because you forced me, but now I need my $22,000 back.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Because the judgment has now been rescinded. Here's the proof.
Faye in Balfour, hi.
You can ask for the 22 plus interest.
Sure. Faye in Balfour?
Hello?
Go ahead, Faye.
How are you?
Very good, thanks. Go ahead, Faye.
All right. No, the issue I was raising here is I took a loan from Standard Bank. It was dated 2012. And in the contract, it was signed for 5 years. Right?
Yeah.
So after 5 years, I was thinking that I'm done. But up to now, I look at nowadays, it's 9 years. Nine years. So when I ask them now, what's happening? Because the contract was 5 years. So the explanation they give me, I was not satisfied. But after now, I'm paying. Now it's left now 9,000.
So you've been paying for 5 years, the amount that you were supposed to pay on a monthly basis. And they are saying that after 5 years, you still owe another amount of money. Are they giving you any explanations as to maybe it's interest rates or is there any reason that they give you for the increase in the amount that you now need to pay after the 5 years? What do they say? What is it that you're not satisfied with?
No, because I remember every time when they were having interest rate high or down, they let me know. But they were telling me I will pay exactly the amount signed at the beginning. But I was thinking that after 5 years, it would be done, or extra 1 year to be 6 years. But now it's 9 years.
Why would you be happy with an extra 1 year, Faye?
No, because I was thinking that like those interest rates they are talking about. That is the reason I was thinking that okay. maybe this extra
Trudy?
Yeah,
Trudy?
Interest rate, yes.
Trudy?
Obi, if I'm honest, I'm a little bit stunned by this situation. It doesn't make sense to me at all.
Yeah.
Normally, if one signs a loan agreement, it's for a particular repayment term. And if you stick to the amount that you're supposed to be paying every month, according to this loan, then you finish it at the end of the 5 years, and that's the end of the story. If you have defaulted on any of your payments, or you've paid less than you were supposed to pay, sure, then the term will get longer.
Defaulted.
9 years is
defaulted.
A lot longer right. than 5 years.
All right, Faye, what I'm going to ask you to do is take Trudy's contact details so that you can get in touch with her offline and explain this,
okay.
because it does sound a little strange, yeah?
All right.
Faye in Balfour Park, much appreciated. Darius in Sandton, hi.
Hey, good evening. Trudy, quick one on my side. It's not debt related, but it's on the Prescription Act.
Yeah.
Why, for example, many of the retirement fund and pension fund companies allowed to invoke the Prescription Act. This is almost like the reverse of what we've been discussing. Because time has lapsed that so-and-so has not claimed, and for some reason they tend to invoke this Prescription Act. And my next question then is, when they do that, who really benefits then from these unclaimed funds after 10 years? And they can say, I can't find Aubrey for 10, 15 years. And Aubrey's not a miner. He just lives in some rural area. He cannot be traced. And then after that, he appears. And for some reason, then they'll say, well, no, based on the Prescription Act, you can't claim anymore. Thanks very much. I'll listen on the radio.
Thanks very much for that question, Darius, which is quite relevant for now. 44 billion rand is sitting with the financial whatever board. Can they do that, Trudy? Can the pension funds invoke the Prescription Act?
Yes, I read about it. To me, it seems as though that's them scoring an own goal to invoke Prescription in respect of a retirement fund, because the fund is there to maintain the beneficiaries of that fund. If there's now a beneficiary, even if he comes forward a bit late, who says, I'm your man or I'm your lady, please provide me with my benefits, then saying, oh, 3 years has passed and you're not 65 anymore, you're now 69 or whatever, and it's now too late, we're claiming Prescription and consequently we won't be paying you out. Then they're sitting with money which has been saved up to pay this person's retirement maintenance, but what are they going to do with that money then? So as you say, Aubrey, that just leads to a complete build-up of funds which have to continuously be administered and which the fund doesn't know what to do with. So to my mind, it sounds like a very bad idea for a retirement fund or pension fund just to say you're too late to claim
Trudy,
Prescription.
I have to have you here again. I've got calls still coming through with people wanting to ask questions, but I do want to have this conversation about the pension funds. I didn't know about this, about the fact that they can evoke the prescription law. How do people get in touch with you, especially somebody like Faye and Bashir, please, Trudy?
My landline, so don't call now, call tomorrow morning at 8:30. I'm based in Cape Town, so the code is 021, and the number 422-0269. My email address is Trudy, Trudie, at Brookman, the spelling is Brookman. .co.za.
Trudy, thank you. I got to stop.
Brookman, you'll find my website.
All right.